Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Hello and welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. How's everyone doing? I hope everyone's doing okay. So the weather here has finally gotten dry. It's still really hot. So when I see all of you people who post your fall photos and your snow pictures, I just want you to know that I am super jealous and we can't even leave right now and go anywhere. It's been a really difficult time that we are all going through, and many people are losing their loved ones, and many people are sick as the numbers are going up. All we can do is take care of ourselves, stay safe, and have compassion for others. I make a conscious effort to focus on all the good stuff in the world. There's lots if we put our focus there. And I created a public Facebook group for those purposes. The group is called Postcards of Love, and I share anything uplifting and inspiring, funny or beautiful. And like I said, it's just where we put our attention and focus that matters. So if you feel so inclined, you can join the group and you can share anything inspirational that you feel you may want to put out there. Each week I share on Mondays, I share a Magic Monday message, and what it is, it's a postcard that I photograph with an affirmation. And this week's is That's Rich. The postcard was created around manifesting abundance, but it's also a reminder where in our lives we are rich. Is it in our health or family or friends? Is it in our home with our jobs? Where can you see your own riches? Maybe ask yourself that question, especially right now. It's so easy to focus on the terrible things and the BS if we allow it. And I know many people right now who are allowing it. It's easy to slip into the stress and negativity. It does take a conscious effort not to go there. It's we're works in progress, right? So we all do the best that we can. You can find everything that I'm doing on all my social media accounts, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So if you're interested, you can follow me. And you can also find me on my website, postcardstotheuniverse.com. I have a cool guest coming on in just a minute. I can hear you in the background, Kate, so I don't know. I don't think you're muted. I just wanted to let you know. Maybe you are, but we can hear you. But I'll bring you out here in just a second. So I wanted to talk a little bit about my giveaway for the book that I've been talking about, if you guys have been listening. And this is interesting. I noticed that people aren't really participating as I had hoped. I thought that many people would want to, truthfully, I really did. And I'm not sure why. Maybe people are not in the right headspace right now, or they have their attention elsewhere, which is understandable with everything that's going on. So for those of you, who are hearing about what was she talking about, a book giveaway. So I created this giveaway, and my goal was to sell 1,000 copies of my book, Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams. So I wanted to try to sell 1,000 copies. And it's all about manifesting abundance using postcards and creativity. And I have exercises and writing prompts in the book, along with 30 postcards and their manifesting stories come true. So once the goal was met, what I was going to do is I was going to give one person a cash prize of $500, and you would have to send me a proof of purchase. Only books purchased during the giveaway are eligible. And I have all the information about how to email me on my website. And I'm doing a second prize of giving away to 50 people chosen at random an online course that I created, and it's a downloadable document. It's called Manifesting Through Gratitude, a visual course workbook. It's 44 pages long, and it's filled with tons of exercises. So that is the giveaway. I'm ending it at the end of November. And if I didn't make the goal of 1,000 books to sell, I was going to select 100 random names to receive the course, the 30-day online course, for free. So since everything is shut down, you know, I'm trying to get creative on how to get my book out there because I'm an author and obviously I want my book to sell, right? That's why we want to write our books. We have a need to write our books, but we also want to sell our books. We want you guys to read them. So if anyone who's listening today has any ideas, you know, about how to, you know, to sell the book or get the book out there, please email me. I would be so grateful. But I did want to mention the giveaway again. So if you're interested, you have an opportunity of winning some money or the course, which either way is really, really nice. I just want to mention next week I have on Reverend Gregor Possman. I had him on last month, and he'll be a regular on my show. He's a psychic trance channel, and Gregory channels over 40 light beings, including archangels, as well as master teachers. And he's going to be channeling live on the show with the emphasis on gratitude and thanksgiving in honor of this time of year, because he's on Wednesday, and it's the night before, you know, the day before Thanksgiving. Okay, to get to my guest, who I'm super excited about to have today. So I'm just going to read a little background on her. Kate Farrell, storyteller, author, librarian, founded the Word Weaving Storytelling Project and published numerous educational materials on storytelling. She has contributed to and edited award-winning anthologies of personal narrative. Times They Were Changing, Women Remember the 60s and 70s, and Cry of the Night Bird, Writers Against Domestic Violence. Her new book, A Timely How-To Guide on the Art of Storytelling for Adults, is called Story Power: Secrets to Creating, Crafting, and Telling Memorable Stories. It was released in June by Mango Publishing. Recently, Farrell presented workshops for adults on the art of storytelling at the San Francisco Library. And she is now offering virtual workshops for libraries and writing groups, as well as performing virtually as a storyteller. In the book, she has more than 20 skillful contributors with a range of diverse voices to tell us how to tell an unforgettable story. So welcome, Kate. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited because I've seen you do your storytelling before, because Kate and I have met virtually. We've met online because that's what we're doing now, right? Everything's online.
Right.
So yeah. I'm going to ask you before, what do you mean by storytelling, and how did you start storytelling? What is it?
Okay. Well, I have to say that this sort of relates to your postcards as well. So I want to tell a little story about how I got started with storytelling, and maybe that will give you an idea of how my whole life story came to be. And I think that's what we're all focused on right now, is self-reflection. Mm-hmm. Who are we? Mm-hmm. And how do we manifest who we are? So I'm going to tell just a quick story of how I started out as a storyteller. So it was a journey when I was a young girl. My childhood was chaotic. We moved from place to place. And when I was 10 years old, we were living in a neighborhood on the south side of San Antonio, Texas. It was a very poor, modest neighborhood in the 50s, and probably still is. We had a chicken coop in the backyard, and my mother really depended on those eggs. She was terrified when rattlesnakes got in there a couple of times. But my two brothers and I, we had the run of the neighborhood. And one day, I decided to take a very long walk by myself. I crossed the main busy thoroughfare and went into a park and found the local library. When I walked in, I was captivated by a shelf of books that were rainbow colored. Every book was bound in a different color. I picked up the red one first, and I discovered it was a book of fairy tales. I checked it out. Later, I came to know that this was the famous Andrew Lang Rainbow Collection of Fairy Tales from the 19th century, gathered from all over the world. But I was fascinated by the stories. the magic and how each character overcame danger and evil to the happily ever after. For me, stories were a safe space because of my family's uncertain lifestyle. I grew to love them. They were empowering, and I wanted to share them in a fairy tale play. And so I decided to invite all the children in the neighborhood to my play. I made up the story based on bits and pieces of different tales and practiced with my little brother, who was only 5, to take different parts. And the day came, my mother said she would make popcorn. And when it was time to start the story, my little brother got so shy, he ran away and hid under the covers in his bed. I had to take all the parts of the story. It was my first storytelling event. I had no idea at that time that storytelling as an art, telling the story orally to a live audience, would be something that would influence the rest of my life. So that's how I got started when I was 10 years old.
I love that. Well, I don't know for you guys listening, do you see how what she did? So she told how she got into storytelling and what storytelling is by telling it in the format of storytelling. Like, I read your bio about you, right? So I'm just telling information about you. But you just shared with us something that was really significant in your life, right? Because it was the trajectory of where you took your life in the form of a story. Because actually later in the show, maybe you can share another example of what, you know, storytelling is by telling a story. So it's cool that you kind of found that being so young. A lot of us have no idea what we're going to do or where we want to go until much later.
Right. And I began thinking about that lately, especially during the pandemic, as you said, we're surrounded by so much news, we can get depressed. Mm-hmm. But I've been using this time since I am retired to look back at my life and sort of see where did that, as you say, trajectory start. And I know from my work in education, childhood development, that oftentimes people say that middle childhood phase between age 11 and 7, between 7 and 11, is mm-hmm. a golden moment in our lives. Because if you remember the magical thinking of early childhood, how you would pretend mm-hmm. everything could come
about. Oh, yeah. And, yes, and some days I wish I could go back. Yes.
Right. And then right. about that same time, mm-hmm. you're able to reason and be logical. So when those two thought abilities came together, people mm-hmm. say, including Jung and other psychologists like Piaget, that is when we are most connected to ourselves, mm-hmm. our true mm-hmm. self. So one way to get started knowing, well, what is your life story, is to think about that part of your childhood. And what were you doing when time seemed to pass, when you were so absorbed in one particular thing that it was all encompassing? So looking back at 10 years old, I really encourage others to do the same, because we have the time right now to think about what is our personal story. How did it get started? Does it influence us now? And mm-hmm. is there a thread? Can we actually do the way you do with a postcard, create mm-hmm. elements that kind of take from those early experiences and see, maybe they're hidden, but maybe they're not. You know, I'm not sure. But mm-hmm. but I don't have a great study to point to. but I think that that when I think about my older brother, who's still alive, It's amazing to me that the things he's doing right now are some of the activities that he loved when he was that age. So it's just fascinating. And I wonder how much he lost of himself not doing those things, that he had to wait till retirement to kind of return to his sense of self. But what I've been able to think about lately, and I hope to share with everyone, is that your story is so, so important these days. Your personal, unique story, right, Melissa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who you are is even more precious than ever before, because I think so much of our country is getting swallowed up in these huge narratives, these great, big, overwhelming narratives that are divisive, that create different sides, you know, this side or that. And the individual identity is lost.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's funny that you were talking about the age, and we're coming up to a break here in just a second. So I don't want to dive into that until we come back. But it just made me think, and I wanted to say this before we went to the break. My favorite time of childhood, and I remember it so clearly, was between the ages of 8 and 11. That's when I was the happiest in my childhood, and that's when I mostly was playing in my imagination and creating stories without even knowing it. All right, so we're going to take a break really quick, so stay tuned, guys, and I'll be back in 2 minutes. Hi. I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on Om Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives. Okay, welcome back. I hope you were listening to the first part of the show. We're talking about being storytelling and storytellers, and Kate's book, Story Power, Secrets to Creating, Crafting, and Telling Memorable Stories is out, and it was just released this summer. Okay, so Kate, I said this to you during the break, and this dawned on me right when you were talking before we went to commercial, when you're talking about the age, that magical number, that 7 to 11, what do you think is happening now with kids? Because when I was younger and when you were younger, we didn't have phones. We didn't have the cell phones, right? So we were using our imagination a lot more, and we were going out and we were creating stuff. And look at what, you know, you created from you going to the library, getting books, and becoming a storyteller. So what do you think about the kids that are addicted to their phones? I mean, they're so young at that age, 8, 9, 10, 11. They all have phones now.
Well, you know, I really worry about that. And also, I believe that with the schools being closed, I don't know if the schools are closed where you are. Is that right?
No, they're not closed where I'm in Florida. They're not closed, but my niece and nephew are both being homeschooled. So I notice with my niece, it's affecting her. She's 10, and she's, I notice with her, with the phone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
What I do notice now is that in many of the urban areas, like particularly here in San Francisco, where I am, because of the density, they just don't want to open the school. Right. Until it's really, really safe. So these children at that age are not only addicted to their phone, but they're online, they're on Zoom, they're constantly online. And it's affecting I think it's affecting their sense of self that they're not able to connect. And I know with storytelling itself, storytelling is a live performing art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so so when all those venues shut down, and they're still shut down, all the literary events, the libraries, the bookstores, we couldn't tell our stories, we couldn't read our books.
Right.
And even though with us as adults, we're going online, it's still not the same. I would suggest that what we're doing right now on a radio program is by far more connected than on a screen. And I think it would be fantastic to have children's story hour that isn't visual. And part of the reason that I remember when I was a kid, we didn't have television yet. And the people who did have television were wealthy. You know, they had the first first month. And so we would listen to the radio, but only when we were permitted to listen to the radio. But we would listen to the Lone Ranger, and we would imagine all this in our minds. We would imagine the, you know, even though it was some kind of cheesy sound effect in the background, right?
Right.
Clump, clump, clump. And it was lightning, but it was just someone crinkling the paper. But what was going on in children's minds was that they were not only listening to language and understanding oral language, but they were also imagining, visualizing for themselves, creating those pictures in their own mind. So I think it would be great if I were running education to have really great podcasts, really great shows for kids, and get away from the screen.
And get away that's from the screen, yeah.
Get away from the screen, because that's going to be a hotter medium than a screen. A screen gives you too much input.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if you're familiar with TikTok. Are you familiar with TikTok?
Yeah.
Do you know what
that
is? Okay, so TikTok, there are these videos, and they have to be less than a minute, and they're so fast, and they're so nonsensical, and they don't make sense, and it's so much coming at them so fast. Like, I like what you... what you say in about your book, that you say stories are everywhere, and the art of storytelling has been around as long as humans have, right? We used to sit around before the written word. People would pass their stories down to their children and grandchildren by sitting around and telling stories. And I don't, and I've noticed that they don't have kids, little kids don't have the patience to sit and listen to the stories anymore, because they're so used to being bombarded. And like with TikTok, it's literally a 30-second clip, and then it goes from one thing to the other. It's like, I don't know how their brains can adapt. And I love that you say storytelling is not only prevalent, it's vital. It's vital to having to having these conversations, to share. And I love about sharing family wisdom. So you want to just share a little bit about that, because I think it's really important.
And in fact, I talked about that on my blog post today. Is storytelling for everyone, because Thanksgiving is coming up, the holidays are coming up. So my blog is all about how to really engage children if they're young children with maybe puppets, which would be sort of an objective way of sharing a story, maybe telling a story in tandem, or action figures, where we used to do that, right? Where you would have a doll around, the doll would move around. So those are really basic old-fashioned things, but they're so incredibly valuable. So even if a family get-together is limited to the bubble, just a few members of the family, to take the time to bring out a doll and have the doll talk, to have the doll tell stories, to have a puppet. And all of this is very old-fashioned, but it's powerful because of the connection, the mental ability. It's a whole brain activity, because it's logical, it's magical, it's vocal, and it's connected to someone else. So it's a very important thing. And the other part of the blog post today was how to tell a story from your own child, from your own childhood. Mm-hmm. So if you have a story that you know that was fantastic that you can remember from that happened the very same age as your grandchild or child, to really take time to shape it as a story with a beginning, middle, and end so that it has that narrative arc and it has a little tension. No one knows what's going to happen. But they will be engaged. They will have the eye contact with you, your gestures, your emotions. That's the kind of quality, and as you say, vital connection that our children are missing. And even if we're using a picture book.
And we're missing it too sometimes as adults. We get sucked in too. So we're missing out on it too if we're really focused back on our screens and we're not really engaged, right? So
Right.
Yeah.
So I think the best thing to do is to look at key moments in your life and the opportunity to share them in conversation and in live gatherings is limited these days. But you can begin to think about them. And that's why I started out talking about self-reflection, because we haven't really taken the time to think about what is our story? What are the elements of our particular storyline? What were the key? And this isn't to write a memoir. It really isn't. It's just to have a sense of who you are so that when you communicate it, when times get better and you're able to communicate who you are, you have some of those important stories that you can actually share live on the phone or on Zoom. And they're the most effective way to share value, to share history, to share legacy, and at the bottom line is identity. And what do you say?
Well, really quick, I just want to say it's funny that you said memoir because a couple of things. In your book, Story Power, you teach us techniques for creating and framing it as a storyteller instead of just reading a narrative. So if you're writing it or if you're talking it, how is it similar or different to, say, a memoir? Like, how is it different? Yeah.
So I think what I'll do is I'll tell you another quick story.
Okay.
So years ago, when I was a brand new teacher here in San Francisco, all the new teachers were assigned to the very worst schools, right, naturally, because everyone else was transferring out as soon as they could. So in 1966, I was an English teacher in a junior high school with at-risk students. And I quickly discovered that many of them could not really read or write, certainly not the books that we were given to read in the class. And I didn't know how to teach them how to read. I was a high school teacher. And everyone assumed that people knew how to read. That's systemic racism, right? So I decided I was going to read aloud. And I would read aloud from the page, you know. And after a while, that first year, I got really bored with reading aloud. So this one day, it was after lunch. I had a packed classroom of ninth graders. And we were supposed to talk about a Greek myth. I was so bored doing read aloud that I decided to tell it. And I didn't even know what I was doing. I walked away from the lectern and stood in front of the class. And I began telling them the story of this Greek myth of Daphne and Apollo. And as I began talking directly to them, eye contact, gestures, in seeing it in my own mind's eye, saying it in my own words, they were paying attention to me more than they ever had. And I knew that they didn't even see me. They were looking through me to that myth. For the time that I was telling it, the room changed. It was like that ancient Greek forest, and the chase scene with Apollo running after Daphne, and that she was terrified and feared him, and then finally called out to her father, who was a river god, and he changed her into the laurel tree. Well, the kids were in the palm of my hand, and it was such a powerful teaching moment. I knew that they were engaged in growth, seeing it with me. It was co-creating. It was the magic of a simple spoken word. Their creative imagination and mine were working together to make this story come alive. With no props, no screen, no costume, just voice and inner concentration. So when I realized how powerful that was, I was able to teach a better way. I mean, I could use that whenever I felt I needed to get control of the class.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But
that's great. I love that. That's so amazing. It's funny that you were talking like that. I don't know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. If I did, it just made me think of my 11th and 12th grade English teacher, because I had her 2 years in a row and she was the best. And I didn't even realize that's what she was doing. She was storytelling. That's why that was part of my reason for loving to read, was her classes.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what it is it is a magical, made out of thin air. There's nothing there except what you can make believe is there. And what I have found so powerful throughout when I did the word weaving project and trained thousands of teachers is that each one of them found their own creative voice. They were able to reach students who were special needs students, who were English language learners. They could reach them in a way because, as we were saying before, time had no place in the story. You're simply so there that, and then they would say, tell it again.
So, right. And I think it's a shame that that's not actually approached more, especially right now with the curriculum, right? Like, they shut down the schools and they didn't change the curriculum. And then you have these kids trying to learn online without a teacher there, not understanding and material that's not interesting, right? But you want them to learn.
Right.
So make the material interesting by putting it in the format of storytelling, because you're going to get them engaged and they're going to learn. And I love that you say about your book that in your book that storytelling is the most effective way to communicate and to affect change if we know how to use it, right? If we use it correctly. And I kind of, I want to know what you mean by how to affect change, because that's really important. And if I have to, stop you in the middle of a thought, we may have to stop and then come back to it, after the break.
Okay.
But what do you mean by affect change?
Well, part of what I wanted to do in the book was make sure there were included diverse voices. So in the 22 people who have story summaries and tips about how to tell stories, there's so many different approaches, free writes, outlines, all these different ways to learn a story. I wanted to make sure that there were voices from different cultures, from different political backgrounds, from different parts of the country, because a story is a vehicle for change, because it is our common ground. And we can identify. So here's the thing. If you're listening to a story and it is a living, live performance, even a virtual live performance, you're identifying with the person who's telling it for the period of time that storyteller is engaging you effectively. You are that person. You have entered that world. And, so hopefully when I told my stories on this show, you or listeners were actually imagining themselves as a young girl with a, on the south side of San Antonio or teaching a class in an inner city school. You
Absolutely.
Were there.
Right, and right. Okay, so let's stop right here. I don't mean to cut you off, but I was there. So I want to go back there when we come back. So let's take a quick 2 minutes and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back. So I'm going to continue my conversation with Kate Farrell from Story Power, Secrets to Creating, Crafting, and Telling Memorable Stories. So we were talking about you know, affecting change, storytelling, and how it affects change. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but I have to sometimes I have to do that. I have to say, wait, just hold that thought, and we'll be right back. So if there's anything that you want to add about, you know, about ways that storytelling can affect, you know, change.
Right, right. So what I think is that in the art of storytelling itself, because it involves creative imagination, and the person who's listening begins to hear the story as if it's happening to them, to her, him or her. So that creates empathy, and it also creates identification. So if your story is well told, and that's what the book helps you to do, how to create tension at the beginning so there's some kind of problem, that's what you want in literature and fiction and in storytelling. You want to have an obstacle, something that makes people wonder what's going to happen next. So we are constantly living our stories, and we, for the most part, don't know how they're going to end. But in the container or the frame of a story, we do experience resolution and happy ending or an ending of some kind. And by doing that with someone else, we enter into their process of change, their process of empowerment. And we learn from that. That's what folk tales and fairy tales were all about. In the oral tradition, they weren't there just for fun and games. They were telling people over and over again what that the values of truth, honesty, compassion, bravery, courage, those are the ones that win out. Those are the ones that make the difference. So the stories that we can tell one another that are our journeys to truth, our journeys that made sense of our lives, those are the stories that other people can hear. And what I think is going on right now is that people are so they've disappeared. I think we've disappeared into these huge narratives that are not unique. They are movements. And, you know, certainly they have value. But if we're going to affect change, it really and truly has to happen at the human personal level.
Level, right. That makes a lot of sense. That makes, yeah, because then there's a connection. Because then we have a connection. We connect. Yeah, that makes, right.
So
yeah.
one of the great opportunities I had was after the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement. There's a storytelling group here in the Bay Area that wanted to do something. And I pitched an idea to do stories in black and white, pair a story so that I would tell a personal story and a black woman would tell a story. And we workshopped our stories together. And we came from similar backgrounds at that particular time in our childhood and sort of at that particular time in our country. And what we learned, okay, so we told these stories, we workshopped, we rehearsed, we were facilitated by a black woman storyteller from Virginia. We went over the questions, we started to think about how to answer those questions. But when we were live together, told our stories and began to talk and discuss and dialogue, we realized what were triggers for one another, what we had missed out. I think the sense of loss was what I came away with. Was when I grew up in Mississippi on the Gulf Coast, I was younger, like 7, 8, and 9 maybe. And then we were so segregated with Jim Crow then. And the same thing for my partner who was from Louisiana. We were very similar French Catholic Bayou culture.
Right.
And I realized the incredible loss that I experienced as a child, being a white segregated child. That even though and we became very much aware that our culture had already integrated, that the culture of the South, especially there, was already French and Spanish and African and that was the reality. That was what was real, and that we had been denied the experience of one another. So I think that was amazing to me that we had to realize that we were both segregated, and that of course, and the consequences were different, of course, they were very serious, deeply influential, and it was very, very difficult to move past them. But having a forum like that was a very carefully done, well-produced vehicle. And now there are many storytelling groups that are doing that, pairing up black and white, pairing up people of color, putting on venues and in different storytelling associations so that we're listening to story by story by story. And each one of them is such an interesting insight into the trajectory, as you said, how our life story was changed by prejudice and how it affected white, black, and
Latina. Are you still doing that virtually now that you can't be doing it live in person? Is that what you're doing, these virtual workshops?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So we're doing virtual workshops. We're also doing virtual performances so that and you know, to tell you the truth, if you go looking for virtual storytelling performances, they're all over the world, but English language includes the UK, different parts of the globe. You can listen to storytelling 24/7 right now.
Oh wow, that's incredible.
if you feel like it. Because, you know, they're all there and they have, so each one has a different focus. And but basically it's, you know, it won't last. I mean, we're still hampered by the fact that we're on a screen. We're not co-creating the way we would. And it's like frustrating to all the storytellers. But I'm excited because I've learned so much, even on virtual shows, that our individual voices, our individual stories are the ones that connect. And it's just the same as with the postcard. How you put together your own manifestation is unique.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I love about the postcards, is that each person creating them, it's unique to them. It's theirs. It's all their, you know, from their background, their perspective. So it's just another way of sharing ourselves with others, right? To have the courage to get out. Is that what the World Weaving Project is? Because I wanted to make sure I mentioned that before the show ends. Right. Is that the same, or is that something different?
No, the World Weaving Project was in the education. And we did that with the State Department of Education throughout the 80s and into the 90s. Then educational theory changed, and it wasn't going to support storytelling anymore. Nevertheless, I still believe, as you have mentioned, that young children would benefit greatly from storytelling, not read aloud, but storytelling. And this morning, a friend of mine who's a librarian in San Francisco phoned me and said she's absolutely exhausted with being on Zoom. She can't stand it anymore. How is, you know, only 3 months, and how are we going to get through this? Right. So I said, can you bring me in as a guest, and I'll be a guest storyteller? And she said that she would look into it. So that'll give me a way to maybe break in. What do you think? Maybe break in a little bit and say, listen, librarians, if you're having a really hard time, I will come in and relieve you, you know, for at least.
Yeah, that's great. But it's a really, really good idea, because what's happening is we've been forced, this pandemic has forced us to go, like you said, it's very like internal and do some self-reflecting. And it's really, I've gotten a lot more creative during this time because I've had the time. And I get bored, so I can't just sit around, right, twiddling my thumbs. So what starts to happen is the things that happened when I was a little kid and I was bored, I would create. So I'm creating. Right. My photography's gotten more interesting. You know, my writing's gotten more interesting. The people that I'm meeting and conversing with is becoming more interesting. So...
Right.
So we have to reinvent things that aren't working anymore, right? And this constant technology isn't working for all of us on a 24/7 basis. We need to go back to the basics, storytelling, creating art, you know, connecting.
Right. And so what I'm hoping is that if I can kind of get through the crack, you know, because things are up in the air, and I can do storytelling with children at the elementary level, and then we can design things for them to do that are imaginative, creative play, that are spin-offs from the stories that they do on their own, right? So I'm looking forward to it. It's not the focus of Story Power. Story Power is really for adults to learn how to tell stories to one another. But that is so powerful in and of itself, because the more we can let go of the veneer of the sort of superficial definitions, in many ways, they've been pushed on us too, don't you think? And by the media, by people who need to report on things. And but we're bigger than that. We're way bigger than the mass media. And so providing venues. So one of the things I'm doing in February with the Mechanics Institute, which is a local private library, but emphasizes history, I'm doing a two-part workshop so that I train people in how to tell a story, record a story, a well-told story of the pandemic, and then their stories recorded and kept in the archives of the Mechanics Institute Library, so that it's kind of like a way of gathering some of the important historical moments of this very challenging time.
Yeah. Oh my God. I know. That's a really good idea. And actually, how would people, like, let's say somebody listening today wants to get in touch with you and wants to have you do a storytelling event, obviously, you know, virtually right now, but you know, this will pass. It will pass. We just have to wait it out. You know, we'll be back out there. So how do you want people to like reach out to you if they want to contact with you?
Well, I think the best, the best way is through my website, kateferrell.net.
Okay.
Kateferrell.net. And there's a contact form there. And I think that in addition to that, if anyone wants to participate in a virtual workshop, even at the Mechanics Institute in San Francisco, it doesn't matter where you live, as long as the time zone is compatible, you can sign up. So any of the events that I have that are listed, we're already booking ideas in January and February. We're doing so. So it's something that I want to do on a continuing basis. And that's how to keep track. But if none of that works, please buy my book, because it is it really takes you through the basic techniques. And for me, the basic technique is the inner vision, being able
Well, thank you so much, Kate, for being here with me today. And, you know, you can reach out to Kate, katefarrell.net, and you can connect with her. And I so appreciate you being here and sharing storytelling with us. It's really important, especially right now.
It is. Thank you so much.
You're
a lot of ground.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, guys, also remember to participate in the book giveaway or have any ideas for me. Please reach out so we can connect. Connection is important. Thanks for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. I'll see you all next time. Have a wonderful week. Next week is Thanksgiving, so remember to find gratitude in your life. Peace.